This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. When disaster strikes, we often picture emergency crews rushing in, people like firefighters, paramedics, and search and rescue teams. But time and again, it's ordinary people who play the most vital role in the critical moments before first responders arrive. That's according to the co-directors of the University of Delaware Disaster Research Center, Tricia Wachtendorf and James Kendra, who have spent decades studying how communities respond to disasters and recently wrote about how local heroes are crucial to disaster response. Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon is joined this week by Wachtendorf and Kendra to learn more about why local communities are often the first and most crucial line of defense in a crisis.
Tricia, we'll start with you. This idea that people, ordinary people and locals, are crucial to disaster response before and after first responders arrive is something that It certainly doesn't get enough attention. It's something that I think might surprise our listeners out there. And why is that? Why does what really is an invaluable role of the everyday civilian in crisis, why does that get underreported and overlooked?
A well-oiled response system is absolutely critical when disaster strikes. But by very definition of what a disaster is, as you noted, that's going to overwhelm local resources. So it really makes this contribution of everyday citizens, local businesses, and community groups so essential. When you do have a really robust response system working well, that's what we see on the news. That's what we see in the media. It's people stepping up into those roles that we expect of them. But in a large-scale disaster event or something nearing a catastrophe, it is those things that are going on the side, in the corner. It's somebody stepping up to help a neighbor. It's something someone doing something not in front of the cameras. And because we don't see it, we can often underappreciate the critical role that plays. So think back to when COVID-19 impacted Delaware. People were parked outside of libraries trying to get onto high-speed Wi-Fi because they didn't have that at home. Having those libraries set up was crucial for them. Neighbors who just reached out to pick up groceries for an elderly couple down the street because they were too immune compromised to provide assistance. That, on top of kind of a community outreach effort, anything that the state was doing, it's the combination of all those resources coming together that makes that response successful, not just one or the other.
There's a number of things I want to unpack there, and we have seen quite a number of disasters recently, from the wildfires out in the LA area, these really tragic plane crashes and commercial plane crashes that we've seen recently. But as far as what you just said, is that part of why you both wrote this article for The Conversation, to sort of spotlight something that needs and deserves more attention?
Well, I think that it's safe to say that in all or virtually all of the events that we have studied at the Disaster Research Center, there has been a very substantial outpouring of local or grassroots or community-oriented response activities, either in the immediate aftermath of the event or continuing on into the recovery period. And, you know, as we said earlier, absolutely, without taking anything away from the importance of the official response, it's important to highlight the kinds of activities that people participate in just through their ordinary lives, through the networks of people that they're associated with, through their social capital, through the organizations that they belong to, their faith-based or community-based organizations. And that stands out as a strong supplement or an augment to the official activities. And people can actually get a lot of work done, even without planning in advance, as long as they're engaged in things that they have some familiarity with and know what they're doing. So one of the situations that we studied after 9/11, probably one of our largest studies, was the boat evacuation, where between 300,000 to 500,000 people were evacuated from Manhattan by an unplanned armada of dinner cruise boats and tugboats, sightseeing craft, and so forth. And what made that successful was the fact that people knew each other, they knew the area, they had skills that they could use. And that's an important aspect of disaster response that we see repeated over and over again. So you can't really get the full picture of what's happening in a place that's experiencing a disaster without knowing and showcasing something that's happening with these informal responders.
Well, you write that this lack of, or you write, and I quote, "the lack of public understanding about the large number of local residents already involved, often including disaster victims themselves, can lead to an influx of outsiders eager to help, and that their arrival can actually pose challenges for the disaster response." So, you know, that lack of attention is problematic in its own right. So what kind of challenges, though, that were referred to there, what kind of challenges are we talking about?
I think sometimes there's these misconceptions about disaster behavior on the part of those who are directly impacted, that they are going to be only victims, not survivors with capacities, that they are unable to provide any assistance to their own family and friends and community members nearby. And as a result, sometimes those individual efforts can get pushed aside. So if you have people coming from outside of the area without knowledge of that community, without specialized skills and resources, sometimes those are certainly needed. But if they are supplanting the involvement of local efforts, they might have a great deal of knowledge and resources that get expended in that immediate time frame, and rather their support and effort can be used elsewhere. As we highlight in the article that we wrote, sometimes people end up sending supplies and donations, material forms that are unpackaged, cleaning out their closets, or sending things with all good intention. But those are not things that are needed in the immediate aftermath. And there's plenty of resources nearby. Quickly, that community becomes overwhelmed with trying to navigate. How are we going to distribute this? How are we going to store this? And it ends up being a problem in its own right. Sometimes there's a lot of good and willingness to help, but there's nowhere to put people in those immediate time periods. And as the response goes on and we move into the recovery phase, there's actually a lot of other ways that people can provide support through. For example, we suggested financial donations to local community groups that are themselves impacted by that disaster, may have a reduced amount of charitable donations from people impacted in the area. But those are the groups that know their constituents, work with them routinely, and providing support in directed ways can be a better way to help those impacted by disaster, rather than trying to push them aside when they're already involved in the response effort themselves.
Yeah, once again, there's a few things there I want to unpack. But James, when we back things up a bit, you wrote that, again, and I quote, "disasters by definition overwhelm local resources, making civilian responders like these essential," end quote. So this, something that we touched on a bit ago, but when we say disasters, what exactly is that defined as in this context? What qualifies as a disaster? What has to happen where, you know, something rises to the level of a crisis or a disaster? Or is it more of like a, you know, it's not quantified, it's just kind of like you see it, you know it sort of deal?
As you can imagine, there are a lot of different concepts of disaster, and we see the word used sometimes very informally. You say, "Well, my office is a disaster area," or something like that. And we hear a lot of related terms like disasters or catastrophes or crises. Typically, when we're talking about a disaster, we're talking about an event that overwhelms the ability of a community to meet its own needs or a portion of its own needs, often without outside support. So we distinguish disaster from an emergency, as bad as emergencies are for the people who are engaged in them or who are suffering from car accident, house fire, or things like that. But when we're talking disaster, we're talking about an event that touches on most of the systems within a community, whether it's public services, whether it's private enterprise, the school system, basically the things that we understand that makes a community function. Those are the things that are affected within a disaster. And what it means from the standpoint of what we've been talking about, which is volunteers and informal responders, it means that the disaster events are likely going to touch everything that the people in that community depend on for their daily lives. And that means it's also going to open up a space for people within that community to participate in their own disaster responses, because they know their community best. They're the ones who are connected to each other through different kinds of organizations. So that's generally what we think of as a disaster. With a catastrophe, we're talking about an event that is even beyond that, so that even locations around an affected area are themselves affected, so that they're not even able to send the kinds of support that they would normally be able to do after a disaster. So take a Hurricane Katrina example, where 90,000 square miles, I think, is the number of is the terrain that was affected. So even places that would normally be able to assist New Orleans, they were themselves affected. So these are the two kind of gradations between disaster and catastrophe. But we're talking about events that overwhelm a community system.
And James, Tricia spoke to this a moment ago, but providing the right help as far as these volunteers go, providing the right help also seems to be equally as important as providing that help in the first place. What about that?
Well, we're certainly not saying that people should undertake jobs for which they have no skills or training, or that require a kind of, a specialized skill set. But many of the kinds of disaster tasks that are useful in the aftermath are things that anybody can do, depending on what the particular needs are. Anybody can answer a telephone, can unload a truck, can make lists, can deliver food, can do can stock a warehouse, or do those kinds of activities. A lot of what happens in disaster response is that kind of logistical work, or sort of behind the scenes coordination and support tasks. So again, we're certainly not saying that people should undertake dangerous tasks that they have no training for. And in the boat evacuation, example that we talked about earlier, I mean, they were specially trained. Many of them were professional boat operators. So it was, that was within their skill set. But a lot of things that happened around that event were things like I just mentioned, support tasks, handling supplies, unloading a truck, keeping track of things, making phone calls. Those are things that people can do either as part of organizations that they're already attached to, or oftentimes we see that people will form what are called emergent groups, which are groups that didn't exist previously, but people band together to solve problems in their immediate vicinity. And pretty soon those can even become more formalized.
Tricia, this might also be a very obvious answer to this question, but is there any data on why locals, volunteer and, in the first place? Is there a through line in reasoning there? Maybe something, beyond just helping thy neighbor. It's your community that's being impacted. You want to be there, when disaster does strike. But is there any data on the reasoning there?
One of the events that Jim had noted was our look at the boat evacuation, and it was remarkable time and time again when we were speaking with the mariners that they said that they just did what they had to do. They just did what needed to be done. So some of it is people seeing a problem right in front of them, imagining being able to see themselves in that role and being able to help in a way that maybe others don't see. Sometimes it is really proximity. So the research does show, for example, that people are more likely to be rescued by family or friends or bystanders than formal search and rescue teams, not because those teams aren't important, but because family and friends are first on the scene. They know where to look for people. They have that knowledge. People are part of communities, and that doesn't stop when disaster strikes. So the same motivations for people to volunteer in local community groups day in and day out, to step out to help at a school event or raise money for a cause that they believe in. That continues when a disaster happens.
James, then, when we turn our attention to Delaware specifically, recently we've seen, you know, events like Hurricane Sandy in 2012, Hurricane Ida in 2021. Do we know how the state's local response was to both of those? Do we know what that looked like?
The Disaster Research Center, after a couple of those events, was actually engaged in some emergency planning exercises and planning initiatives. So I think back, for example, to actually Hurricane Irene, which was a close pass to Delaware in 2011. And as a result of that, the Disaster Research Center worked closely with Delaware State Department of Health doing planning for nursing homes and assisted living communities within the state. And that was a year-long planning effort. So that's something that, you know, that we were closely engaged in. We've worked with the state on evacuation planning for people with disabilities. A couple of our faculty have also been engaged in some planning and research activities within the state, looking at aspects of flooding.
All right, interesting. So then, for the listeners out there, as we wrap up, how best can we support these kinds of local efforts when crisis does come upon us? What can we best do to support other first responders and whatnot?
So I think one of the key aspects, if you're looking in your own community, is to see some entry points of getting involved. Even before a disaster happens. So, for example, most states have what's called a community emergency response team training. So individuals can look up that particular operation in their state, often connected with their county or their city, and get training before a disaster happens. I think from an outside perspective, it is, again, remembering that we want to do things that support local efforts. So it is really paying attention to the calls from officials from those communities, supporting efforts that are already ongoing, and remembering that there is a role to play in supporting communities after disasters have faded from the news stream, and communities are dealing with that recovery effort for years to come.
Thanks to University of Delaware Disaster Research Center co-directors Tricia Wachtendorf and James Kendra, and our Kyle McKinnon for joining us on The Green this week. Up next, Arts Playlist, where we head to the Mezzanine Gallery at the Carvel State Building in Wilmington for a look at a new exhibit that chronicles a single day in Venice, Italy. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.